Welcome to Sonata Secrets with Henrik Chilham, unlocking the world of classical music.
Hi there, secret seekers. I've got a new studio with a grand piano and everything. I'm going to be filming here from now on, and I thought I'd do some more Schumann on the channel. A few pieces from his Waldscenen, forest scenes. Not the most well-known, but so good pieces. So check it out and don't click away. Robert Schumann is one of the first generation romantics, born in the same year as Chopin in 1810. He wrote almost all of his piano music in his younger years and then went on to write chamber music and songs and some symphonies. And especially the songs, the Lieder, he composed in cycles, and these cycles often encapsulates very well the emerging romantic ideals of the 19th century, with themes like the pleasures and pains of love, or the expressiveness in nature, especially as a reflection of inner life or the transcendence of the sublime. And the most famous song cycle is Dich der Liebe, a poet's love, with lots of reference to nature and flowers there too. And when it comes to piano music, he has quite a few of these collections of pieces that don't conform to traditional movements of a sonata, for example. You probably know about Kinderscenen, scenes from childhood, and there are also bigger ones like Kreisleriana, Carnival, Papillons, or the Symphonic Etudes. And then there's also Waldscenen, forest scenes. It's 9 pieces, rather short and not very technically demanding. It's written in 1848 and 49, which is quite a lot later than the rest of his piano music, which he wrote earlier. They have a simplicity to them, and it's sometimes a deceptive simplicity, because underneath there's often intricate counterpoint and rhythmic ambivalence, and the typical Schumann eccentricism shines through every now and then. And tying back to the theme of nature, this is literally scenes from the forest, like things you might come across or things that might happen when you go for a walk in the woods. It's basically a song cycle without words. Now, number 3, Einsame Blumen, or Lonely Flowers, is my favorite. It's got a simple 8th note pattern, but it's just so achingly beautiful. Let's play the first part again. Now, what makes it beautiful? What makes this song great? And the answer is suspensions. In the melody, on the second beat, we always have a suspension in the melody. It's left hand provides the harmony and a textural base for the whole accompaniment. And the melody goes, it's B flat major with an E flat suspension, that's the 4. And then, again, E flat is the same 4 actually. C minor, D is the 9. These are just details on the surface, but that's the key, suspensions. So, you might have noticed already, it's a duet. There's 2 voices in the right hand. It's slightly hidden though, because you can also feel it like one continuous melody of 8th notes. But the beams are on opposite sides, so the first bar kind of continues with the quarter note, gets a resolution. And that's another suspension. And then, at the same time, the answer comes in. And it's imitating the melody all the time. And again. Now it's below. And when they meet at the same time and they kind of brush up against each other, they create these aching dissonances in the 4th bar. That's the first voice, and then. And again, if I jump to bar 11, the next phrase. Now the first voice gets a. little bit of variation, and it brushes up against. It's almost ugly in itself, but it's so beautiful when you add the texture. And so on. I'm gonna go and jump straight to a kind of an overall interpretation of this piece. I'm gonna continue go through the music, don't worry. But it says in the concluding remarks in my Peter's edition in the back here, it's kind of an interpretation here. I'm gonna read a little part about this piece. The two-part nature of the right-hand part and the plural in the title reflect, as in a flashback, it could be argued, the loneliness of Schumann and Clara during their struggles with Friedrich Wieck. Friedrich Wieck was Clara's father. A supposition based on the knowledge of the circumstances under which it was composed. So, for those of you who might be new to music history, Clara Wieck was like a superstar pianist in her time, and she and Robert Schumann were in love and they wanted to marry, but Clara's father didn't approve of such a low life as Robert. But they were in love, so they had to go to court and win some case against this father deciding in the family. And they did that, and then they got married and were kind of happy. So I think that's a cute interpretation of this melody. They really belong together because they're cut from the same cloth. It's imitating all the time, but they have the unfortunate fate of not being together at the same time. Anyway, you can take it if you want or not. You can also just let the music be the music. Now, there's one more feature that's got to do with the rhythmic organization. It's in 2-4, of course, but you almost feel it more like the first phrase is two bars of four beats each. So then I would say that the hypermeter is like two bars is one unit, and then the phrase is two units. Then the interesting thing happens after this first phrase. The answering phrase, how do you feel this phrase? It's not two units anymore. It's more like three units in six bars. So one, two, three, and then starting over, and so on. So I think this is like these two phrases, a statement and an answer, they're asymmetrical. And I think that's kind of a grounds for beauty, like the human face. It can be beautiful, and it's not because it's perfectly symmetrical, it's because it's slightly asymmetrical, like the eyes are always a bit different, and it provides a total uniqueness of whatever the matter is, as we have here. After this, from bar 11, we get now a couple of phrases that are symmetrical to kind of balance it up again. It starts the same with this variation, but now a different close. It's more firm, it's not going out of this ambiguous thing as the first time. Now it's a double bar line. This is like the first main section. Now comes a little episode. We get some minor chords, the tiniest amount of drama in this forest scene. And it's repeated, kind of emphasized with more chords second time. And now comes this. So what is this? If we look at the melody, it's actually the same as in the beginning, but it's reharmonized. It's just one note different towards the end. But in the start, now when it comes back, it's It's the same melody. The answering imitating voice now comes below the first time. But the harmony is crucial here. So instead of going from B flat major to E flat, it's now reharmonized with G7 to C minor directly, and then D7 to G minor. And of course, the suspensions that are the same in the melody, they are even more painful when it's minor chords. But then, the answering phrase, now we get this three-unit phrase. Now it turns, because this is the same harmony, goes to the major instead. And it's a lovely turn here after this minor. And it's just soaring in the high register. Then we get the same kind of second answer of a pair of phrases that's symmetrical. Feel more grounded. Then there's like a second episode here. Now it gets a little bit more energy. Not minor this time, we get this. So it's, what chord is it? B flat major, the F sharp is the plus five, yearning plus five chord, and the F sharp goes to G. Then kind of gaining some momentum in the high register. I think I kind of move forward a bit here when I play it. Now we get the same augmented chords again. And now they're filled out with the duet is in the left hand. So sad or nostalgic, from major C major 7 to minor. And it's even C minor 7 and the minus 5, 7, like half diminished, the G flat. And here again we have one of these small asymmetries. This I would feel as a three bar phrase. Well, it's not overly clear as a three bar phrase or like a three bar unit, but because the music is so ambiguous, it doesn't want you to feel clearly where the downbeats are in the hypermeter. But this is the closest, I think, is a three bar unit. So one, two, three. Because here is a very clear first. And this is a clear two. One, two, one, two, three. And there's another three again. So we have three plus two plus three bars for this. Again, not very clear, but I think it helps when I play to know where to emphasize the downbeats a little bit more. But you can also just let it float here. The texture gets a bit more still here, the left hand. Clear resolution back to B flat major. Now we get the main melody one final time. It starts the same, but immediately it takes another track to kind of close things up. Kind of to G minor, lovely chromatic things here in the left hand. Another asymmetrical three-bar phrase. Two, three, and one. So we're really feeling the ending coming closer. Some dissonances, but with a B-flat pedal and resolving just these chromatic neighbor notes. I don't know, I kind of like to do the arpeggio in the end. It doesn't say, but either way, I think. Thanks so much for watching Sonata Secrets. A special shout out to my Patreon sponsors, Jay Perlman, G. Coombs, and MS Voss. And I should have a special performance video on this piece up on the channel.